This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, May 18th. I'm Angela Denning. Like the rest of the world, the warmer months in Petersburg mean construction season. That's even more the case this year, with numerous public paving, infrastructure, and construction projects underway or on the way. The most noticeable is probably the $8.3 million paving, drainage, sidewalk, and bike path project. It's in its second year along Haugen Drive and South Nordic Drive, not far from downtown. The Juneau construction company Secon has restarted work this spring and will be continuing through the summer. Borough manager Steve Giesbrecht says that work has the biggest impact on Petersburg's downtown.
The plan is to have that stopped and the road totally open for Mayfest and for 4th of July, to try to make that as easy as we can on folks. And once they kind of get out of the downtown area, I think it's less impactful on at least the people right there at the main intersection, Nordic and Haugen. Yeah, I think that's the biggest impact, because it's just a bottleneck there for everyone. But I think we'll all have to deal with it in one way or another between now and in the fall, September-ish, I guess.
There's also sewer work just south of town along South Nordic Drive and on Haugen Drive to get ready for the paving. And the borough also plans to pay Secon to do over $500,000 worth of paving on local streets this year, because that contractor is in town. That means the borough's Public Works Department is fixing some of utilities, drainage, and surface of those roads in preparation for paving. The borough wants to repave portions of 8th Street, Oslog, Goffin, Excel, Fram, Joa, Surf, Charles W., Odin, and Lumber, as well as part of the 3rd Street near Wrangell Avenue. Another large borough project just getting started is the $6.6 million renovation of the police station and municipal building. That's also a two-year project being done by a company called MCG Constructors, DCI joint venture of Juneau. Giesbrecht says some work has already begun.
The main thing is asbestos and lead paint abatement that's going on both the first and second floor. So that'll happen, give or take, another 10 or 12 days. At the same time, the main contractor that will be doing the remodeling is starting to mobilize. They got their work trailer there. They have their supervisor on site. We're already meeting every week to talk over plans, and you know, they're getting supplies ordered and that kind of stuff. So at this point, not a tremendous amount of actual construction work going on, but that'll come pretty shortly after the abatement is done.
Other work is underway at the public library. That three-year-old building is getting rock drainage landscaping on the surrounding lot by local company Reed Brothers. Also this summer, construction is scheduled for a new $1.3 million loading bulkhead along the parking lot at Petersburg's new drive-down dock in South Harbor. That work is being done by Tamiko of Petersburg. Giesbrecht said with the contracting and subcontracting companies involved, it is a little difficult to get an idea of the local construction workforce. However, he was able to come up with a rough estimate.
Roughly, you know, 80 to 90 jobs for the summer, and about a third to half of those are local employees or people hired here locally to work on these projects. So, you know, and that includes flaggers and people at Tamiko and you know, Reed Brothers and Rock
doing,
and Road.
Doing the library.
Yeah.
Hardscaping.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of a mix of, you know, and as well as DOT people that have either been brought in, but also local maintenance crew that helping out on some of the projects. So,
Giesbrecht apologizes for the traffic delays and detours with all of the work this year and asks motorists to watch out for workers when driving through construction zones. Most of the public works are scheduled to be finished this year, with the exception of the municipal building and police station renovation, which will continue into next year. Petersburg High School's track and field teams wrapped up the regular season last weekend, competing against schools from the southern part of the southeast region in Ketchikan. The teams competed against squads from Ketchikan, Sitka, and Thorne Bay under sunny skies. Over 30 Petersburg high schoolers and another 20 middle school students made the trip. Coach Brad Taylor said it was a good meet for his teams.
Kids performed really well, had a lot of top first place finishers in just about every event, so it was very good to see these kids go out and perform at this level.
Team scores from the event were not available. PHS athletes finished first in a number of events.
We scored first in the girls. We had Elisa Larson in the discus, Mariah Taylor in the shot put. Isabel Eath was first in the a long jump, triple jump, 100 hurdles, and 300 hurdles. We had some. We had a first place finish in the girls 4x8, and a real good finish in the 4x4. So the girls team came along really well.
Kaylee Eddy was second in the 600, and Hannah Funt took third in that event. Eddy was also third in the 100 hurdles. Taylor highlighted some of the performances from the boys' team as well.
Alan McKay, first in the high jump. He ran first in the 100-meter dash. Ethan Cummins was first in the long jump. So there were some. And Casey Bell also was first in the 110-meter hurdles and the 300 hurdles. So overall, really, really good performance by our boys and our girls.
Also for the boys, Tucker Hagerman won the 800 by 1 second over the nearest competition. Casey Bell took second in the 200-meter run, and Nathaniel Lenhard was second in the 110 hurdles. The boys' 4x100 relay also took second. The track teams head to the regional meet this weekend at Thunder Mountain High School in Juneau. An Anchorage man was mauled by a brown bear near Yakutat over the past weekend. 29-year-old Kenneth Steck was medevaced to Providence Medical Center in Anchorage on Friday after suffering extensive bite wounds. It's the second serious mauling in southeast Alaska this season. Robert Woolsey reports from Sitka.
According to Yakutat police, Steck went camping in Disenchantment Bay on Thursday near Callahonda Creek with his wife and several other friends. The group was armed and planning to hunt for black bear if they saw any. On Friday, Steck left camp on his own to get water from the creek when he was attacked by a large brown bear. Although he had a weapon, he was unable to draw it in time to use it. According to police, the attack may have lasted up to 2 minutes before others from Steck's party arrived to drive off the animal. Steck reportedly suffered severe wounds to his lower leg, scalp, and shoulder. He received first aid from his wife, Hannah, an RN, and two other RNs in the party. Their call to the Coast Guard was overheard by the Yakutat Police Department. Officer Jeff Lee reported to the Yakutat Clinic to collect additional medical supplies. Lee and clinic staffer Mark Schultz traveled aboard the Yakutat Harbormaster boat and met the campers in Johnstone Passage and began administering advanced medical care. Steck was stabilized at the Yakutat Clinic and medevaced to Providence and Anchorage. Hospital officials confirmed that he has since been released. Officer Lee says the attack appears to have been unprovoked. The bear is presumed to be a boar rather than a female with cubs. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been doing DNA studies in the area. The department will attempt to collect DNA samples from the victim's clothing, but Lee says the biologist he's spoken with thinks it's unlikely that they'll be able to identify the bear responsible for the attack. This is the second mauling in Southeast so far this spring. On April 18th, the UAS outdoor instructor, Forrest Wagner, was seriously mauled in Haines while teaching a class. He was hospitalized for about 3 weeks. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg's Little Norway Festival is underway this week with food, entertainment, dancing, and other fun lasting right through Sunday. The annual event honors the signing of Norway's constitution and the strong heritage in Alaska's Little Norway. The festivities opened up Saturday with the celebration of the city of Kuprinov's 40th anniversary, and several events are on the schedule for today and tomorrow. Joe Viknicki spoke with Festival Committee Chair Janet Holton about this year's offerings.
The Visitor Center is open from 9 to 5. That's at First Street and Fram, and they have a great selection of travel information, publications, maps, posters, souvenir items. It's a great place to get your start.
And the Claussen Museum is open as well. The art show is all week long?
Yes, they're honored to host the Little Norway Art Show. Stop by and see the latest in local talent throughout the festival. There's no charge for that.
Okay. And there's also a town hall meeting by the Coast Guard that night, Wednesday, at 7 o'clock.
Right. That's at the Assembly Chambers at the PIA building. And information is for mariners on mandatory exams, AIS requirements, electronics, more. There'll be a Q&A, and all are welcome to attend.
Okay. How about on Thursday, a couple of those same items, but some new ones in there as well?
Yes, the Muskeg Walk with the Forest Service Interpreter is taking place at 2 p.m. Meet at the Visitor Center. and that's at First and Fram. Join Joni Johnson on an interesting leisurely walk and learn about the unique surfaces that make up the Metcalf Island ground cover.
Then the Silver Tea for the Medical Center staff is later that day?
That's also happening starting at 2 p.m., 2 to 4.
Okay.
They're honoring the staff at the Petersburg Medical Center, and that's at the long-term care solarium.
And then also at 2 o'clock, live Norwegian sweater modeling.
Yes, you can experience the new collection of Norwegian sweaters modeled live by local friends and families. So you can take a walk and do all kinds of things starting at 2 p.m. on Thursday.
Okay, and Thursday is also the start of the first of a number of sporting events that go on throughout the festival weekend, the Eric Coral Memorial Norske Softball Tournament. This is a multi-day tournament, right?
Yes. They are up at the ball field starting. The tentative start, I believe, is at 6 p.m. on Thursday.
Okay. All right. And that goes through Thursday, Friday. Saturday, I think, is the championship on that one.
Yes. They are welcoming prospective players. Games go on through Saturday, depending upon the number of teams participating. So you want to play softball, head up to the field.
And also, starting on Thursday, there's a couple opportunities at the local bars as well.
Right. DJ Alvin at Keto's Cave. That starts at 8. And at 9 o'clock, Shot Ski Party at the Harbor Bar. It's always a good time. And if you have questions on that one, give the Harbor Bar a call.
A full schedule awaits on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we'll hear more about those events coming up later this week on KFSK News. You can find the schedule for the Little Norway Festival on our website, kfsk.org. Alaska Democrats spent last weekend in Anchorage picking delegates for the party's national convention, which is happening in July, and setting priorities for the year ahead. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, a minor controversy over corruption broke out just ahead of the session's end.
It was the largest turnout ever for the state Democratic Party's convention, and with so many new people came a few new problems. As far as the presidential contest goes, things went pretty smoothly. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has 13 pledged delegates from Alaska, while Secretary of State Hillary Clinton received 3. Alaska's 4 superdelegates do not have to announce who they support ahead of the national convention. Sanders' campaign director Jill Yordy was elected to be a national delegate for Sanders and says she plans on sticking with Sanders until the bitter end.
I'm going to stand with Bernie the whole time. I cannot imagine myself flipping at all at any point.
Of the 523 delegates who came to the UAA campus for the convention, just under 100 supported Clinton. 18-year-old Darian Traw says she likes Clinton's focus on gender and ethnicity in policymaking, and even if backing Clinton puts her in the minority among Alaska Democrats, Traw still finds the state convention's energy exciting.
This is really fun for me. I thrive on frustration, but I like using the frustration that comes from these kinds of events and using it to be to energize myself.
Besides delegate selection, the convention allows Democrats from across the state to come together to strategize and set a party platform. The platform is the document laying out the party's aspirations and ends up influencing the policies and candidates Alaska Dems put weight behind. And the platform drafted this year is particularly progressive, with language on climate change, food security, and detailed equal protection measures. But the convention concluded without voting on that platform. Former legislator Ray Metcalf says the party violated its own rules by adjourning without passing the drafted document. Instead, party members opted to send it back to a standing committee to finish editing and finalizing it.
For all practical purposes, the platform is dead, unless party rules are violated.
Metcalf says that it didn't pass in part because of a controversial anti-corruption measure expanding the interpretation over conflicts of interest that was included in the draft. He thinks by sending the document back to committee, opponents will gut the measure.
This party platform had all kinds of stuff in it that would have been advantageous to the Bernie Sanders agenda, in that it augured in the direction of getting dirty money out of politics.
Metcalf says the move is without precedent. but others close to the process dispute Metcalf's interpretation. With so many people attending the convention, many of them for the first time, the newly written platform ballooned in size, with much confusion among attendees about the rules for adopting changes. Jake Hamburg is a spokesperson for the Alaska Democratic Party and says the convention was coming to a close Sunday afternoon after a day of running hours behind schedule, and that is when the platform came up for discussion.
The committee was asking for more time. They had a draft ready to be presented, but they were worried that they would not have enough time to get it finalized at the convention.
And Hamburg says Metcalf is wrong. There's no violation of the rules, and that as long as the party's central committee approves the document, then it's a valid platform. But for many in attendance, the convention was less about internal party politics than getting Democrats in Alaska fired up for the presidential election in November, with the goal of beating the presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska's two new ferries will be named the Taslina and the Hubbard. Governor Bill Walker's office announced the new names in a release this week. The ferries had to be named after one of the state's 745 named glaciers. The naming process was an essay contest for Alaska school students. In all, there were 488 essays submitted from those in 6th through 12th grades. 7th grader Malia Varane of Ports Allsworth nominated Taslina. She says it's an Athabascan word for swift river, which she said was an appropriate name for a ferry. Taylor Thompson, a sophomore in Eagle River, nominated Hubbard. She says, unlike most glaciers, Hubbard is advancing. She said this slab of ice has defied its predisposition, and a ferry should be just as incredible. The two ferries will be completed in 2018 and will provide day boat service between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.